Testing. Hello. Welcome, everyone. Hi, I'm Jim Nakashima, and I have with me
Saurabh Bhatia.
And we're going to be talking about developing apps for Office and SharePoint using NAPA, which is a code name for a tool that we actually have in preview, and Visual Studio 2012. So before we get started, actually, I want to kind of pull the audience a little bit. How many of you are SharePoint developers today? Okay, pretty good number of folks. What about Office developers? How many Office developers do we have? Actually, a pretty good number, too. Slightly more SharePoint developers, I'd say, but a good representation of both. So actually, the thing to mention there is actually all the current ways that you extend both Office and SharePoint are continue to be supported in Office and SharePoint 2013 and for the foreseeable future. Compat is actually a really big, important thing that we have in Office. But what we're talking about today is actually a new way to extend both Office and SharePoint, and it's a new unified cloud app model between the two where we can actually have solutions that compose between Office and SharePoint, which we'll show you, and it's just overall a new model. So we'll talk about that new model real quickly. We're not going to spend a lot of time on that, and then we'll drill into apps for Office more specifically and then apps for SharePoint. Along the way, we're going to have lots of demos. This really is primarily a demo-focused session, and really want you to get an understanding as a developer what it means to actually build these things. So let's talk about the new cloud app model a little bit. So why are these called apps, actually apps for Office and SharePoint? Really, it's the notion that we have. I mean, everyone understands the value of bringing apps onto phone and Windows 8 and so on. What we want to do is actually bring that concept and that value of apps and adding value to a platform to where you actually spend a lot of your time, in email, working your calendar, actually working on a document or in an Excel spreadsheet, and bringing that same notion of try, find, buy, share with apps into your Office applications and SharePoint as well. And SharePoint's, you know, a lot of people spend time every morning going to SharePoint, their portal, and so forth. So bringing that app concept to those applications. So there's a store as well as a corporate app catalog. And so we do support the notion of public, buy an app, use it yourself, as well as more the enterprise or corporate IT type model where you can provide a number of apps to your users and manage those apps for your users as well. So, and kind of just a graphic there, showing a store integrated into Office. Okay, so quick overview. You know, the app model isn't purely for O365, works on-premises as well as O365. We've built in the application lifecycle right into the model, so you can actually track what apps are being used, not used. If you happen to have a rogue app, you know, even by accident, you can pull it and retract it from your users. As well as when you upgrade Office versions, you can see, oh, these apps are being used, these ones are not. And then actually being able to move to confidently move to the new versions because you've tested the apps on the new version of Office and SharePoint. Everything is web standards based, and this is something that I'll probably, between the two of us, actually, I'm guessing we'll probably say 7 or 8 times, is that it's just built on web standards. It's actually primarily web development that you do when you develop for this new app model, this new apps for Office and SharePoint. Although there are some specific APIs and services and APIs that are specific to Office and SharePoint, those services and APIs are exposed through web standards. And finally, we've integrated this store right into Office and SharePoint. So you have a first-class entry point to go and buy, again, find, buy, try, share your apps. Okay, with that quick introduction, we'll go into apps for Office and talk a little bit about the scenarios, then we'll talk a bit about the kind of anatomy of an app for Office, which will tee up actually going through and building one right here. Oops. So there are different app shapes for Office. One is a task pane app. So you have the document on the left, task pane on the right, and it's separate from the document but interacts with the document. And the canonical example I have for that is a dictionary app, right? So dictionary or translation, it allows you to interact with the document. Maybe you select something and the dictionary just comes up and says, here's the definition, right? Then there's content apps, which are actually in the document itself. And the canonical example there is in Excel. You could have a data visualization that uses actually web services as well. It could use Bing Maps. It could use different JavaScript libraries that are available on the net and will actually provide an in content that actually is a part of the document visualization or other functionality as well. Finally, the third type is a mail app. And it's called mail, but it actually applies to emails as well as appointments. And what that does is it looks at the content of a particular email or appointment, and based on the content can activate and actually show you additional information. So the canonical example there is a mail app there when you buy something from your favorite online retailer and they send you a mail and say, you know, here's the UPS tracking number or FedEx tracking number. You can actually go and right in the top, in line, click on a little button that will bring up a map or maybe just status of where that package is and when you can expect it at your door. Okay, so with that, let's get a little more concrete and look at some samples. All these samples are available in the Office store today if you're using Office 2013. So here's the canonical task pane one that I was showing you. Dictionary, highlighted text, and it actually shows a definition right there. We also have, this is an example from LegalZoom, where you can actually do something a little more with that task pane. You can actually help a user build a legal document, maybe with standard legalese, standard citations, and other things like that. And then once the document is ready, you could use that app for Office to go and take that document and give it to, you know, send it to some service, which then would be, you know, some legal attorney review service, and then kind of return the results back to the user. So you can kind of integrate that right into the document generation. Here's a content app visualization, you know, different size bubbles based on different data values. And Saurabh is actually going to show you how to build this right here in this session. Mail app example. Oops, there we go. Mail app example. This one's kind of fun. It's a LinkedIn mail app. So actually what it'll do, it'll actually show you the LinkedIn profile, excuse me, for each one of the users or people, each one of the people on the on that email. And the thing that I noticed, I was playing with this the other day, and I actually found that it was pretty interesting because you could actually see, you know, what's listed in the address book very easily and compare that to what's actually in LinkedIn. So I noticed this one, I was kind of looking at this one and noticed that the titles don't totally match up. But anyway, just kind of fun. And actually, true story, I actually did find a number of titles that didn't match up. Not that one, but you get the point. And here's one where it actually activates on content. So you see here that in the mail it says, hey, do you want to meet at 2 p.m.? You want to meet at 2 p.m.? And based on that, the mail app can say, oh, great, I know that they're going to have a meeting, so let's provide some options for a conference room and allow you to book it from right within Outlook. And again, bringing that app functionality right into where people actually work. Okay, so you understand the scenarios and the type of cool things that you can build, and the fact that you can mash up actually web services and have Office really be another entry point into the existing services that you have. So you have an entry point with your Windows 8 client, with your phone client, with the web client, and now you can build an entry point for your through Office and SharePoint. So at its really simplest, the most I could distill down the anatomy of an app for Office is that it consists of a web page and a manifest. The manifest describes the app. So it's what will show up, like the icon, the description, the title, you know, insert this Bubbles app here. And then the web, and it also has a link out or a URL essentially out to where the web page resides. And so the Office applications like Excel or Word, Project, PowerPoint can go out and say, okay, I know where to find the content for that. I'm going to load that up and then actually show that inside of the Office applications. So let's double click into that real quick here. Imagine we'll just use Excel as an example of the Office applications. It goes and, you know, you go to Excel, you go to the store, you add an app for Office. Essentially, it brings down an app manifest. It actually doesn't do that exactly. It gets an ID to a manifest, but then it can make calls and get information. But you provide the information via the app manifest, and that travels through to Excel. From there, Excel knows, okay, when the user adds this app for Office into this document, which they will, I know where to go find the URL to actually bring in to host the app for Office. And that brings down a web page. That web page can use a JavaScript library, essentially an object model, that allows it to interact with the document. And those combine up to create the app for Office. So, you know, pretty straightforward, and it'll become more clear as Rob actually shows you a demo of building one of these things. And he's going to start with the overall experience of getting started. So right from, I don't have anything, where do I go?
All right, thanks, Jim. As Jim said, I'll start off with, I don't have anything. It's like, you guys, you're have your laptops right now. Where do you go and get these tools? Right? So the first thing you want to do is go to dev.office.com. This is kind of like your developer portal with tons of documentation on the new app model, lots of samples, probably a few videos of us talking about it. But most importantly, there's a sign up link, which when you click on, lets you sign up for an Office 365 developer site. And what this is it's a SharePoint site, much like any other SharePoint site, but what makes it a developer site is you can sideload your apps on that SharePoint site. So your SharePoint apps and Office apps, you can just load them. They don't need to come from the marketplace, and you can develop against that site. Now, when you go ahead and sign up, which I kind of have already, so this is my dev site that I've signed up through that same process, you get access to the Napa tools, what we are calling Napa. It really came from Jim's love for wine and the wine country. That's how we call it, Napa, in case anyone was wondering. Not the final name. Code name Napa. It's part of your developer site. So when you first go in, the very first style there, which says build an app, and you click on it, the first time you actually go in, it's going to ask you to go to the marketplace and add the app, because Napa itself is an app for SharePoint, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. But once you have the app installed, you get the option of what type of app do you want to build, right? So Napa allows you to build all the types of apps, including apps for SharePoint, and the different shapes of the Office apps that Jim talked about, the task pane, the content, and the mail app. So let's start off with the content app. I'm just going to call it my first app that I'm going to create right here. And when I hit create, Napa actually creates this project for me in the cloud. And I have an editor here with some code highlighting. On the left, there's some files that are part of the project. There's JavaScript, CSS, and some images. We'll get into that in a little bit. But what I'll do now is I'll just hit this run button right over here. And when I do that, what we do is we package all this up, all your sources up, create a SharePoint app, and install it against the dev site that we got when we signed up. And since this is an Excel content app, we actually use the Excel web app on that SharePoint site to open up a workbook and have a little app right there running in your browser. So what we just did is, without installing anything, we created a new app right there in the browser, had some code in there, ran it, and in the browser, you can still see the very first app for Office running, right? Which is pretty cool. So anyway, this is a simple app. All it lets you do is set data, which was a sample data. If you have any data in your document, like that, say, you can get that data back, and it's back in the app. All it's really doing is the little white region over here is your app. It's just a web page. It has JavaScript in there. And using the Office JavaScript object model, it can talk back to the workbook and read and write data, right? A very simple app. So let's build on top of this. As Jim mentioned earlier, I was going to show building like the Bubbles app. So what's that all about? Now, since it's a website, since this app is essentially a website, a mini website, which has access to data in the document, it really opens up interesting mashup scenarios, where you can call up another web service that's out there, get some additional data, metadata, about the document itself or the data inside the document, and create these mashups. Content apps are especially good at creating nice visualizations, right? So Excel can do great charts, but with a content app, you can even like make interactive charts. So what that Bubbles was really an interactive visualization surface through an app. So what we'll do now is we'll build on this app so that it reads stock symbol data from the Excel workbook. It'll query a web service. I'm going to pick Yahoo because it doesn't require a dev key, so I can share it with all you guys. It's public. And once I get that stock information back, I'll actually visualize it in those bubbles. Now, what those bubbles really are is it's another open source JavaScript library, which is processing.js. You can go there and download it, and here's a sample of another visualization on their website, where all it's doing is it's reading through a bunch of Spanish text, and it's looking for how common letters occur together, and depending on how the occurrences of those letters together, the bigger the bubble, right? So standard, off-the-web, open-source JavaScript library. let's use this. So first thing I want to do is actually download it, but I actually already had downloaded it, so I'll go back to my project, and I'll just start uploading these files. Let's see, I have some demo helpers here, yeah. So this is the processing.js library. Now, if this was available on a CDN, I could have just pointed it to the CDN, but this particular library is not, so I'm just going to upload it. So it's part of my project. I also need this bubbles text to go along with that library. Great, so I've added my library to my project. Now I just need to add a reference to it in my HTML page, and this is when we can take a quick look at the HTML. By default, it's just referring to jQuery on a CDN location. No great library to use for JavaScript. And this is actually the reference to the Office JavaScript object model, which lets you talk to the Office worksheet. So I'm going to start typing in and add the reference to the processing.js library. And as you can see as I'm typing, the editor is actually powerful enough to actually give me code colorization as I type in. It's going to do some syntax completion, so I didn't have to write the script. It just completed it. So it's a nice and powerful editor there. Great, I added the processing.js. Now I want to change my HTML UI. I had those two buttons there with a text box. I don't need to do like the set data. I'm not going to write data, so I just comment that out. I'll keep the get data because I want to read data from the document. I don't need the text box anymore because I want to have the bubbles visualization. So I commented out the text box, and I am actually going to use some help here from my Notepad cheat sheet to paste in a div, which actually is the canvas visualization. So this is where it'll draw the bubbles. It's just a div with canvas, which is hooked up to the processing.js library. Great, so I've updated my HTML. Now I can go to my app.js and update the script. So let's look at what the script is doing in the sample project. It's got a couple of Office functions, and probably the most important one is there's an Office initialize function, which is kind of similar to your DOM ready function in HTML. But the key difference is this tells you that, hey, the Office application, which is hosting this app, is ready to talk to this application. So any initialization code you have just gets written over here. Now, I don't need to, I can keep the get data function because I want to read data, but instead of reading data from the text box, I actually want to just read it from multiple cells. So I'm just going to use the editor, do some find replace, and get rid of some instances. I don't need the set data click handler, so I'll just remove that again through shortcuts. I can get rid of that too because I'm not going to write data. Now I'm going to keep get data, and what this function is doing, this is again another Office call. It's just getting selected data async. It's an async method call from the Office document. One of the first parameters it takes is a text value, is a coercion type, which is initially set to text because I was only reading one line of text, but I want to read multiple cells now, so I'm going to turn it into a matrix. And then I also still need a return callback function. Since this is an async call, when it returns successfully, it's going to call this inline function. And if it succeeds, instead of writing to the text box, I actually wanted to query the Yahoo service now to get the convert the symbol and get the price data for that, right? So I won't write the Yahoo YQL right now, but I will rely on my trusty Notepad here to cut and paste it. And again, it's actually very simple code. If you are familiar with Yahoo YQL, I'm just creating a query here which queries the Yahoo APIs. I'm passing it the value of the result I got from the Office get async call. And it's just going to read through all the symbols and return me the price data. Right, so straightforward. Now, in case you notice there's some red squigglies here, the editor actually recognized, hey, I haven't defined the values function here, which is right. I actually need a values function, which I'll just define it as a global up here to actually drive the processing data. I also, it's values. There you go. I also need to define the show canvas function, which is essentially a function that will display the canvas. The get call was querying Yahoo and it got the price data, but I actually want to now visualize the price data. So I'll just define another function here. I still didn't get it right. Underscroll. And there you go, the squiggly is gone. All right. So I'll define the function, and I can use more editor shortcuts here. There's a snippet functionality. So I use the snippet, and it's going to add the function snippet. It's show canvas. I don't need any parameters. And then to actually draw the canvas, I will copy paste this line here, which actually looks sets up the canvas and sets it up to draw the visualization. So that's pretty much it. I have changed my JavaScript now to query Yahoo and show the visualization. So let's see what happens when I run it now. On the second run, we actually go ahead and figure out, oh, I had run this app previously, so we'll remove it. And then we'll install a newer version of the app, which has these new changes. And then we kind of go through the same process. And we are literally actually like a day away from changing this so that we are smarter, so that it only updates like one file instead of installing and reinstalling the app, which should make this second run a lot faster. So once again, I am in the Excel web app. Let me expand that. And all the other stuff is gone. I just have one button there, get data. Let's type in a few stock symbols. Microsoft. Let's put in Yahoo because, you know, we're using the APIs, and let's just put in Facebook. So I don't know whether NYSE was on today, but hopefully it gives me some real-time stock data when I do it, and it did. So that's the bubbles visualization, which was drawn using the processing JS. If I hover over it, it's actually giving me the stock price. Facebook was at 21, apparently. Microsoft is still at 28, and then Yahoo is at 16. And this is interactive, right? So I can just play around with it. There's actually animations you can have, and you can do a lot more fun stuff with depending on the timeline and the stock, how the stock has changed. The bubbles could grow or shrink in size and stuff like that. So this kind of gives you an example of how you can start building your apps using existing APIs out there, web services out there, or JavaScript libraries to just bring that rich functionality into Office. Now, I saw a lot of you were looking at the code as I was writing it, and I went a little quick because we only have an R here. But what I can do is, right over here, I can say, share this project. And I'll just say display my name. And if you really want to look at the source code, I've just shared that project at that URL. I don't know if you guys can see it at the back, but if you go to aka.ms right now and aka.ms/acvyjv, you can actually view this project that I just created with bugs and all on Napa, right? And you don't need to have Office 365 or a Napa account to view it. You can view the source code anonymously. But if you do have an account, then you can actually copy this project over as I have shared it to your Napa profile and then run it against your O365 dev account. There's a quick question there. The question is, what browsers does Napa support? It's all modern browsers that support HTML5, so IE 9, 10, Chrome, Firefox are supported. Yep. So go try this out. And I think once we switch back to the slides, Jim is going to have another URL with code that is more commented out, has some more error handling. So you don't have to go buy this. This was a quick demo to show you how you can get started. But you can go hit this URL and check it out right now. And it's really a great way to kind of share your knowledge, share your apps, and get even debugging help. So you don't have to copy paste your code. You can just share your project. Another quick question there. It's 2013 Windows and the web apps. So the web apps on Mac does support it. All right. So, well, with that, I think it's back to you, Jim.
Great. Thank you. Can you read that again? Actually, I'll give you a different link here. It's a little bit bigger. It's not the exact same link. This one actually has some comments. It's a little bit cleaned up a little bit. I will also show this at the end on the resources slide. But that is a shared project, but not the exact one he just built. So a couple key takeaways. Look, it was actually just web development, right? And we were able to really easily use the Yahoo service as well as an open source processing library, a JavaScript library. Okay, so with that, actually, I'm going to switch over to a different demo, where I'm actually going to show you how far you can actually go with some of these things. Oh, I have to sign in. Yep. Okay, so here's an Excel workbook, and you can actually get this if you're using Office 2013, Excel 2013. You go File, New Workbook, and you search for Metal Tracker, Metal Space Tracker, and it'll offer up a template option. Click the template, and it'll open it here, just like I have right here. Now, this actually consists of three different apps for Office. So we have the a different version of the Bubbles one right here that Saurabh just showed you how to build. And then we have a map, a Bing map, that actually shows by country, essentially, what the total metal count was in kind of relative size. And then over here on the left, we have, we essentially have more details. So if you wanted to kind of refresh your memory about the Summer Olympics this year, you could actually go and look at these, and you could see that the apps change over on the left, but if a little bit of screen problem here, if I actually switch over here, you see that it switches on the right as well. So three apps for Office, but what makes this better than just actually putting this type of content on a web page? Well, the reason why it actually is particularly interesting is because this is Excel, because this data, this whole center region here, is Excel, and it's real live Excel data, meaning that if I wanted to use Excel functionality, I can do that. So I could go here, and I love the conditional formatting. I think it's great. And I can go and click real easily and actually get some data bars showing up to help me visualize the differences in the metal counts. If I actually wanted to take something here like gold, silver, bronze, let's take a few of these, and I said I wanted to insert a recommended chart, I can get some recommendations right from Excel and add that chart right in here. So I get the full functionality of Excel mashed together with the functionality of the web. And that's really the key point as to why it's interesting to put these things together that way. All right. Switching back, talking now. Switching gears, apps for SharePoint? Yeah, question.
If you wanted to run integration with the backend, like you said, the enterprise,
yes. So the question is, if you want to integrate with the backend and write server code, essentially, not just JavaScript, can you do it? The answer is yes. I'll go back here. If you recall this slide, that web server supports both client and server code, and you can actually do server-to-server calls from that actual web server as well. Okay, apps for SharePoint. So we'll talk about some shapes, we'll talk about some examples, the anatomy, and then go from there. All right, so a couple different app shapes. Full page is the most common by far, and Napa that you saw, the developer tool in the browser that Saurabh showed you, is a full page app for SharePoint. It's an app for SharePoint that lets you build apps for Office, that also lets you build apps for SharePoint, as you'll see in a minute. It takes over the whole page. Now, the Chrome at the top is very similar in style to SharePoint, and we have some controls and things that make it really easy for you to get that look and feel in your own apps. But ultimately, you own that whole screen, and you can do anything that you want with it. Now, because you came from a SharePoint context, you have SharePoint Auth, you can have SharePoint services, you can talk to document libraries and other things like that. So that's the value of being on SharePoint. Then there's Parts, which I think of as just being really cool, super live tiles that you can do anything you want. And for those of you who are SharePoint developers, would be familiar with the concept, it also applies to apps for SharePoint. And then finally, UI command extensions. So the ribbon, Office ribbon, adding some commands there, as well as to the little pop-up windows that come up on the dot, dot, dot in Office, SharePoint 2013. So those are the ways that you can extend SharePoint in this apps for SharePoint model. So let's look at a couple examples. The first, and again, these are available in the store. The first one is AdLib PDF Publisher. It works with a document library, so it'll allow you to select documents from a document library and then actually output a single PDF of those documents. Similar vein, PingR metadata app, it also reads a document library and surfs through those documents. In this case, it actually, as it's surfing through the documents, it actually finds relevant metadata that it adds back to the document to make it easier to search for those documents. Kind of a different one, Facebook integration. So if you have pages on your SharePoint site, you can actually use this app to easily add Facebook social plugins like the like button, like comments, and other things. Finally, Napa. Napa is an app for SharePoint. And we'll go through how Napa works in a little more detail in a little bit. So talking about the anatomy of an app for SharePoint. Again, very similar model to what you saw for apps for Office. In this case, SharePoint is the hosting application, so to speak. And it goes off to the store. You can bring up the store inside SharePoint and say, I want this app or that app. When you select an app to install, essentially the manifest information comes down to SharePoint, and it knows what URL to actually go point to actually load your app if you have your own web server. In this case, the simplest model is that you host everything on SharePoint. And that's what we do in Napa when you actually build an app for Office or app for SharePoint. We actually host everything on SharePoint, so you don't need a separate web server, and then just open up the browser to, either to the Excel web app or, in this case of apps for SharePoint, to that app for SharePoint, hosted on that SharePoint site. Now, the thing is, it's limited to client-side code only, so HTML, JS, CSS, client-side ASPX, if you use this model. And it's the simplest model. By far, the more common model will be one where you actually have a web server as well. So in your actual manifest, you would actually have a URL in there that actually points to your web server. In which case, here you can have server-to-server calls. You authenticate your web server through OAuth and having a key, very similar to how you build Facebook apps as well. And once that's authorized, then you can make calls back to SharePoint, and you can serve up the web content right to the web browser that your user is calling it from. Yeah?
The authentication, is
that
transparent, or does it require
OAuth to authenticate that? So the question is it transparent OAuth, or does it require an OAuth authentication? Actually, the first time you install the first time the user installs the app, they'll have to click to trust it to say, yeah, I know this app is now going to access, like my document libraries and X, Y, and Z, and yeah, I'm okay with that. So, yeah. Okay, so with that context set, I'm going to switch it over to Saurabh here, who's going to build a first app for SharePoint.
All right, thanks, Jim. So we are back in Napa. That's my project page. That's the first app I just created. And let's create a new one now. This time, it's a SharePoint app. So when I hit create, once again, Napa is going to create this project for me with a bunch of sample code already in there. Now, you'll notice this is actually ASPX code. And this is SharePoint client-only ASPX, so it's not full ASP.NET ASPX, which means you can only write HTML JavaScript here because we are creating a SharePoint-hosted app. Now, at the top of the page here, you can see some ASP.NET directives. What these do is, this is a special SharePoint magic there. These will add a Chrome control and a title bar at the top of your app so that your app looks and feels like it's part of SharePoint, kind of similar to what Napa is doing here. There's a bar at the top, which all SharePoint sites have, so your app can also have that. Now, this is a simple hello world. All it's really doing in the body of the message is it has an initializing paragraph, and there's some script written in app.js, as the comment mentions there, which will change this initializing and replace it with the username of the currently logged in user that's using the app. So let's take a look at the app.js also. Again, it kind of follows the same trends as we did with the Office initialize function. There's a document ready function, which gets triggered when the DOM has, it's just jQuery, it gets triggered when the DOM is ready. And in there, we actually call SharePoint to try and get your web and your context. So that's what we are doing over here to get your SharePoint client context. And finally, there's a get username function, which will go and get your username, which is, again, another async call to the SharePoint JavaScript object model, which, when succeeded, will go in and replace that paragraph message, which we saw in the HTML, with the user's username, which is user.getTitle. It's a very simple app. Let's see what happens when we run it. So this time, since it's just a SharePoint app, no Excel, we don't launch Excel web app. We just install the app and launch it up directly in the browser. And this is a full-page SharePoint app. So it's going to take up the full browser. And that's your SharePoint app, right? It's got the Chrome control at the top. And if you notice it very quickly, there was an initialize function. And when the SharePoint object model was initialized, it got replaced by my username in this case, because I am running the app. So very simple app, and kind of what we did with the content app earlier, where we mashed this up with a web service, let's sort of follow on that. We already are getting the username from SharePoint over here. we can use that username and query a service. I'm going to pick Flickr here, again, because it's free and doesn't require a dev key, so I can share it with you guys. And I'll just query all public Flickr feeds with my username on it. And hopefully there's nothing scandalous out there. So I'm just going to write get Flickr data. I'll define this function in a bit. And I'm going to pass in that user.get title that I already was getting from the SharePoint object model. And I will, again, use the snippet functionality to define get Flickr data. And this time, I do need a parameter, which is the username. So to make the actual call, I rely on my notepad again. And that's just a call to Flickr, which is a public API call. It's passing it my username. And then whatever results I get back from it, I am going to just display them as an image. Right? So when I run this app now, you'll see kind of the same app that we saw earlier. It'll show my username there. But along with the username, it's also going to query Flickr and show all the information on Flickr inside SharePoint. There it is. And there's question. My picture. Yes. The question
not
is
yet. No, so yeah, that's right.
The question is can you create snippets and share code? Not yet, is the answer. So right now it's projects, you just share the entire project. So anyway, that's a nice Flickr example. And Jim's going to have a slide. I won't share this exact one that I created here, but Jim's going to have a slide with a shared sample for this project too. Just be fair warned, when you copy it over to your Napa profile, you're going to run it as your username. So it's going to query Flickr for your username, not mine anymore. All right. So that's Flickr. Now, so far, we've kind of been sticking to client code. And there already was a question, what about server code? Right, what if you want to write server code? And there's also lots of other questions, like what if you're in a team, you want to develop a team environment, you want source code control, you want other ALM tools. Well, we already have a great tool to do all that. It's Visual Studio, right? So why not go on to Visual Studio? And we've done just that. When we were developing Napa, we really thought about Napa as a companion to Visual Studio. So Napa is a great getting started experience. You just go sign up, you're in the browser, you can build your first app straight up, and then once you've gotten the feel for building apps, within the app itself, you can click this button right here for open in Visual Studio. And what that will do is it'll ask you to download this file, which is a bootstrapper. This bootstrapper can go in and install all the prerequisites for Visual Studio that you will need to develop apps for Office and SharePoint. If you have them already, which I do on this machine, it just launches up Visual Studio with the exact same project that you started off with in Napa, right? So if I look at the scripts folder here, and the app.js, this is the get Flickr function that we just wrote on Napa. But by clicking that button, we have now brought it down to Visual Studio. But that's not all. When you do bring it down to Visual Studio, what you'll notice is there's a site URL for the SharePoint site you're developing against. So even in Visual Studio, you still are developing against the same O365 site that you signed up for and were using Napa with. So you still do not need to install SharePoint locally in order to do SharePoint development, right? You can do remote development with O365 from Visual Studio, which is a great thing, I think. Anyway, so we are in Visual Studio. We have all the capabilities of Visual Studio. You want to write some server code. I think an example was you may want to add remote event receivers for SharePoint developers out there, event that occurs on a list which say you add an item to a list, you want to trigger a remote event, which is a service that's running, which requires server code. So I can just right-click, say add new item, and I get various SharePoint item templates in VS. I'm going to pick the remote event receiver one. And when I do that, VS will actually query the SharePoint site it's connected to, see what lists are out there. I'm just going to pick one, say tasks, and say when I add an event, I want to run this event receiver when an item is added to that event. Now, what VS did when I added the item was it actually created a web project for me. And this is the web project. and it's just another regular ASP.NET web project in VS, right? You can write all the server code you want there. So this, again, kind of brings back to the point Jim made. We are going to say this a lot. It's just web development. And when you're in VS, these projects are just regular old ASP.NET or MVC projects. So I'll kind of leave that project right here, and I'll kind of do a switcheroo to show you how much you can do with server projects. And I have this other project that's up here, and this is actually an MVC4 project, right? It's a SharePoint app, but it's written in MVC4, uses lots of server code in there, and it's still being deployed to the remote site that we signed up with earlier. What this project is, actually, let me just hit run on this in VS. So you can see it's actually going to talk back to the same SharePoint site that I was using earlier, and it's going to install this package up on that SharePoint site. So again, with VS, if it's the first time you're going to install it, it's a little slower because it needs to talk back to the SharePoint site and set up that connection, but VS actually is already smart enough to figure out if you make a small change, it'll just update those individual files. So. I'll come to that. The question was, where's the web stuff coming running? So when I hit run, the very first thing I'm seeing is this trust dialog, which is the OAuth flow, because this is a server project. I'm going to say trust it. And the app is installed. This is a blog manager debug app that we just ran from VS. If you look at the URL, it's still Microsoft SharePoint, which is the online SharePoint site. But when I click on it, it's actually going to redirect to localhost. Right, so now it's running in VS in IIS Express. That's where it's hosted for now during debugging. Right, but you still don't need SharePoint server. You just need VS with IIS Express on the machine in order to develop the app. And this is just a little utility app. I'll just quickly run through it. Someone on our team put this together. We have a team blog, which Jim is going to point a URL to later on. And we just wanted to manage how we push to the blog. So we have blog ideas, we have write-ups, and we wanted to have a little process where we review each blog, and then once it's ready, then we can publish it out. So all this is there's a bunch of posts that are waiting for review. I can add a new post and say, blog about VS and Napa, and hopefully I have a document that's ready to go, and submit it up, and that's gonna add it to the review post section. It's pending review. Once it's ready, I can change the state to ready, and then I can go ahead and publish it. So anyway, this gives you the idea of what kind of apps you can build using server code and MVC4. So that's the blog app, and for now, it's back to Jim.
Thanks, Rob. Okay, so we have another URL actually for you. This is the Flickr project with some comments kind of cleaned up. And you can go and grab that. Again, it'll be on the resource side at the end, but in case you want to grab it real quick, P1BFYE. A couple key takeaways, actually, there is, again, just web development, right? Got to say that again. But the other thing to mention here is that we've enabled, or kind of really highlight, is that we've enabled remote development against Office 365. Now, I noticed there was a number of people who do SharePoint development in the room. You know, show of hands, how many people are excited that they don't have to install SharePoint on their dev box? Lots of hands went up. Actually, I'm pretty sure it's just as many as we had go up when we had SharePoint, asked how many SharePoint developers there were. So yeah, it's pretty exciting for us. A lot of user feedback. You know, SharePoint server just doesn't work great on a client box. It's intended for a server environment. It's hard to configure. It takes a lot of time. And so that was a key thing. And so really, go to dev.office.com, sign up. It's free. Get your dev site, get your O365 developer site. You get the Napa tools as well. For a lot of you that are Visual Studio developers, you may not even use Napa, which is cool. But because we actually, you know, we care about Napa and Visual Studio, but we built Napa primarily for people who want to get started with the least amount of friction without installing anything on their machine, and so that's really what that was intended for. Question. Right, so the question is, can I run Napa essentially on an on-premises install of SharePoint 2013? The answer is not yet. It's only working in the cloud. But longer range roadmap is that we may enable that scenario. So one of the So how do we think about Napa in Visual Studio? Because it might be a little bit confusing. Really, again, it's if you're not a Visual Studio user today, you're probably just, if you're not a Visual Studio user today, the least impactful way you can get started is through Napa. Or if you know you're just going to do client-side code, something smaller, you're working at home or whatever, you want to work anywhere, use Napa. But really, if you're working in Teams, if you want the full functionality of Visual Studio, like debugging and all those other things, that's really the tool of choice. And when we think about the tooling story for apps for Office and SharePoint, it's really Visual Studio with a companion, a web companion that you can use with Napa. Yeah, question.
What do you need to install an app in SharePoint level of access?
Oh, you need to be, okay, so the question was, what level of access do you need to be to install apps into SharePoint? And I'm pretty sure you have to be an admin on the box.
Yeah.
But not for the developer side, you can sideload your apps. But for a real SharePoint side, you need to have admin rights.
Yeah. Yes, another question.
On your source controller, is it caching the file locally, or it looks like you're just saying straight about
365,
I don't know how TFS
is? So for Visual Studio, TFS works just the way it does today. So you essentially check out files or get latest from TFS, and it pulls them to the local workspace on the local file system, and you work with them there. In the Napa case, we don't have source control yet. It's one of the things we want to look at. But so it's really no different than any other project today. Yeah?
On the content apps, if the app installed, does it save as part of the document, or is it part of that Office instance? Like, if you take that document out of the computer, does it have that installed, what happens?
Right. So the question is, for content apps for Office, what happens when you take that document and give it to somebody else? Maybe you put it on SharePoint, or even you just may email it to some other person who doesn't have any access to your SharePoint or your anything. What happens? So in the case that it's a store, in the case that that app is on the store, the user will log into Excel, for example, and will have the opportunity to either purchase or, if it's free, just install that app for Office. If they don't have the ability to do that, or if they don't want to purchase it, or if they're disconnected, it'll just show like a placeholder. In the case that it's a SharePoint document within a company, it will just work across everybody. If that app's in the app catalog on SharePoint, then it'll work for every user in that SharePoint user group.
And can you talk to web services on local hosts? Is there any security restrictions like that?
Oh, I see. Can you? So the yeah, so the question is, can you get any? Can you talk to anything on the local machine, or are you sandboxed, essentially? In this case, you actually are sandboxed. It's actually an IE. It's an embedded version of IE that gets that actually serves up that content. So you are as limited as you are with any kind of running in any web browser. So now let's talk about Napa a little bit in more detail. And how it works, kind of the anatomy slide, but for Napa. So you have the SharePoint developer site, which you got from dev.office.com. You go to the Office store, and you install the Napa app, and that brings down the manifest for Napa. And actually, in our case, it is purely a manifest. That's all we give to the Office store, and that's all that, essentially, that's the only information that comes down when you install Napa. We call that manifest-only app. Then, when you actually click the tile to launch Napa, it will open the URL, napacloudapp.com, which is hosted on Windows Azure. So we built Napa as an MVC, ASP.NET MVC web application that's hosted on napacloudapp.com on Windows Azure. So you can then use Napa, like you would any website actually, to write JS, CSS, HTML, and ASPX client-side. Again, client-side code only, because we're going to sideload that app that you build. We're going to package it up, sideload it, and use SharePoint, the SharePoint developer site you signed up for, as the hosting environment. So that's why we're limited to the client-side code. From there, we'll navigate to that app for SharePoint that we just installed, and you can run it. And that's actually what Saurabh showed you. We can also, as you also saw, run apps for Office within the Excel web app. So how does that work? Well, the interesting thing about that is that is actually, what we actually are creating in that case is an app for SharePoint that contains code, your user code, But within there, it also has a document library and a document in it, and that document has an app for Office. And then we launch SharePoint. We say to SharePoint, hey, open up this document in the Excel web app. And that's how it opens up. So this actually shows, and I told you before, this is, or mentioned before, that this is a unified app model and it's composable. This is what we mean by composable. You can create apps for SharePoint that actually contain documents and document libraries, and within those have actually apps for Office. Then we took it to Visual Studio, and from there, Visual Studio, you could actually use Visual Studio to continue your development against the same SharePoint developer site. Now, the one thing that I didn't show in this slide to keep it clean is that once you're using Visual Studio and you add the web project, you can then actually, it'll spin up essentially IIS Express to host your web content as well. And then you have that, that other anatomy, which I'll show you again as a recap, where you actually have a web server and SharePoint hosting your content and web content. Okay, so that's how NAPA works, and kind of really shows the flexibility of the app model as well, and how composable it is. So let's talk about publishing. We got about 9 minutes left, so I'll speed up a little bit here. But ultimately, publishing is about getting apps from the developer to the end user. And there's two paths that we'll talk about real quickly. So one is if you've built any kind of app for any store, is one that you'll be familiar with, which is you make a submission at some kind of dev center or maybe at a seller dashboard. It goes to the Office store. When you actually browse the Office store, in this case from Office and SharePoint, from the Office and SharePoint applications, you can try, buy, share, and so on, and it gets to your end users. So that one should be pretty straightforward because apps are pretty common nowadays. The other one was highly influenced by our corporate and enterprise customers. They wanted to go direct to their own IT teams and have their own IT projects or vendors or ISVs or whatever else, and actually work with them to actually have apps that are administered or managed by their own IT admins and put on or made available to their own company or all the users within their company without making them available in the Office store. So these are all internal. And the SharePoint app catalog, which actually is just a list built on SharePoint, actually allows you to have those apps available to everybody who's a user of that SharePoint site. And so when you use Office, the Office or SharePoint applications, you can go and get those apps.
So you said it's integrated with the Office experience?
Yes. Yes. In both cases, both the Office Store and the SharePoint app catalog, when you go to insert in App for Office, for example, in the Office experience, it will show you, and you can actually choose, depending on how you signed in, whether you signed in with a Live ID for, a Microsoft ID for the Office Store, or you used your O365 ID to sign in to your app catalog, essentially. Also, as an IT admin, you can manage buying and purchasing apps from the Office Store and bring them into the app catalog on behalf of your users. So you can make Office Store apps available to your app catalog as well. So when we talk about these both as kind of the app catalog scenario and the Office Store scenario. Okay, so with that, since we're talking about publishing, I thought I'd throw this back up here just for a second, just to recap on what the anatomy is so we can talk about what it is it takes to actually deploy these out to users. And there's really two pieces to this, right? There's the web application piece, which will go out to a web server, and then there's the app manifest, which will go out to the Office Store. In the case of a SharePoint app or an app for SharePoint, there's also an optional piece, which includes SharePoint artifacts, like document libraries and other things, other workflows and other things that you can define that would go to SharePoint as part of installing the app. So those are but essentially that gets packaged together with the app manifest. So there's two pieces: one that goes to the Office Store app catalog, and another piece which goes to just the standard web server and use standard web technologies for that. Now the thing that we've heard from our customers is that, that's great, but we have an O365 subscription, but we don't really have like web servers kicking around that I can just install things. And actually, I'm just curious, from a show of hands, like, how many people actually have, like, if you said, okay, I'm going to build one of these things and I want to deploy it to a web server, how many have a web server available or easily available to them to do that? Okay, actually, a fair number of hands went up, which is good. And actually, I think the cloud has really made that a lot better. But what we've done here for those of you whose hands didn't go up is we've provided an integrated solution. So SharePoint and Azure, we as a team have partnered together to create a solution where you can, instead of having two packages that go to two different places, give one package, a single .app package that goes to SharePoint, and SharePoint will manage deploying the web application piece out to the Azure, to Windows Azure, essentially. And to show you that, Saurabh's going to come up with our last demo of the day to show you SharePoint plus Azure.
So this will be the quickest publishing demo ever, really. So I'm back in my blog app, and quite literally, I right-click on it. I want to publish this out, deploy it. So that's my publish menu. Shortest publish wizard ever. The hosting type is auto-hosted. And the only option I have is whether I want to open up the output or not. Let's keep it checked. And when I do that, VS will build essentially what Jim talked about is an app package. And all I need to do is take this app package, put it up either in the marketplace or in the app catalog, the internal app catalog. Right? So I do have an app catalog set up over here. And you can put in apps for SharePoint or apps for Office over here. I'll put in an app for SharePoint here. I've already installed a blog app over here, which I'll probably use since we're running out of time. But I'll show you just how easy it is to get this new app that I just published to this app catalog. So I just paste in that URL there, upload that file. And once this file is uploaded to this app catalog, it'll be available to all SharePoint sites within that tenant. So if you're a corporation, you upload it to your app catalog, it's available to everyone. So it's out there, it's available. I can go back to my dev site. And someone had a question of how do you access the store. So from your SharePoint site, Office has a different experience, but if you're on SharePoint, you go to site contents and say add an app. And these are the apps that are available. You can either go to SharePoint store, which is the marketplace, or you can say from your organization, which is your internal app catalog. And over there, you'll find the two apps, right? So this is the one I just put in there, which is the debug version that I published. And this is the production one that I had running up there. So to install this app, all I need to do is click on it and say trust it. And then it's going to redirect me to the site contents page. It takes a couple of minutes to install the app, and that's why I had this pre-installed. Same app, went through the exact same process, just did it a little bit earlier. And when I click on it, you'll notice the URL as it shows up, it's the same app, right, which we just saw, but the URL is o365apps.net. So it's still running server code, but it auto-provisioned the site on Azure through SharePoint. You didn't have to do anything about it. You just use a .app package, put it up, added it to your site. You got everything else. So that's publishing.
Great. Thanks.
Oh, sorry.
Okay, we've got 2 minutes left. Okay, so this, the lucky thing is we're on the summary side, so we did pretty good, although we rushed, I guess, a little bit on the last part. So kind of the quick summary is, hey, the value of apps. We brought it to Office and SharePoint, and we've done it in a way that it's web standards-based, as you saw. It's just web development, quote-unquote, and we have a first-class set of developer tools, right? Visual Studio, Napa as a companion to Visual Studio. We have a whole lifecycle. We didn't show this today, but we have a whole lifecycle management around these apps. So you can retract them, you can add them, you can manage them on behalf of your users, as well as an Office store. Find, try, buy, right from the Office store. Now, is Kelly was supposed to show up. Is Kelly here? Oh, Kelly's standing up there at the back. We have an opportunity here for you. We'd love you to sign up and actually participate in some design research. And so you can have a heavy influence on both the Visual Studio and Napa tools and really help us make some good decisions moving forward. And in return, you can actually get some Microsoft software or hardware as compensation. So you can enroll online. We have an aka.ms, Y-I-J-O-Y-E, or again, see Kelly at the back. So the question was about the design research and how you actually get the software hardware. Kelly should be able to answer that. That's really on the design side of the house, so the UX research side, but Kelly will be able to help you. Couple other resources for you, dev.office.com, of course, is the one that we've been talking about, as well as of the Office Apps blog, which should be really useful for you as well. So just want to say thank you very much for attending. We had a good time. Hope you found it useful and enjoyable as well. And if you did, please submit a session eval. It'll help us out. If you didn't, well, you know, you could probably eval something else, I guess. So thank you very much.